Okay, we are
working on finishing up Moses this morning. And when we left Moses at our last question that we discussed the last time I taught a couple of weeks ago was number 7 under Moses. And if all we focused on was the section of Moses' life that we had looked at before, what kind of servant did we classify him as? Reluctant. At best. And it almost seemed like he was almost unwilling, but he did. He went ahead in his reluctance and did what God told him that he wanted him to do. And the verses we're going to look at today, and I want you to know I'm going to try to pick the speed up on this because after today, we have 2 more weeks in November, and I will take 2 weeks in December, and we're going to be done because Sandra starts after the first of the year. So what I don't finish up, I'll just save for another time. Maybe we'll leave Peter for a class when I need to fill in for somebody or something. But anyway, that's the plan. So I may, if I'm moving too fast and y'all want to say something, just say, hold on, and I'll slow down. But in these verses that we're going to look at, Moses has found his voice. And Moses has accepted and is not reluctant, but striving very hard to do what God has required of him. We're going to look at the verses we're going to be looking at today is God's displeased with Israel, and so much so that he wants to destroy them. And at least twice, it actually states that's what he wanted to do. And the other 2 times, we're going to look at 4 times today that God's willing to destroy the people, and we... My assumption is, even though he doesn't tell Moses, I'm going to make of you a nation, that would have been his plan had he destroyed this nation. If he had brought a nation through Moses, would he have still fulfilled his promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob?
Yes.
Yes, he would have. He would have. And so, but we're going to see Moses' attitude and his love and respect for God. And kind of what I see here is there's kind of a dialogue sometimes. Moses says something, and then God has a reply, and then Moses may have a rebuttal, and then God have another reply. So these are interesting things to look at. And let's turn to Exodus chapter 32 is where we're going to begin this morning. And we're at Sinai, and they're not very, you know, these people have been grumbling how long?
The whole time.
The whole time. They're barely out of Egypt, and they're already complaining. And here now they are at Sinai, and what they should be about ready to do is go and take the land. That's God's plan. It's for them at this point. He gives them the law, and his plan would be for them to go into the land. But what happened? Can somebody give me a brief synopsis of what happened leading up to what we're going to be studying this morning? They're at Sinai, and what have they done that's made God so angry?
Built the golden calf.
Built the golden calf. And what in the laws that he gave them, what is the first commandment?
One God.
Do not have any other gods before me. God is the only God. And they never got that lesson. Never. And we see even when it gets down to Joshua, he tells them, put away your idols. So all the time they're in the wilderness, all the wanderings and all that, they've still got their idols. And so God is very angry. And we're going to look at what God says and how Moses responds. In Susan Dunbar, would you read verse 9 and 10 of Exodus 32?
9 and 10?
Mm-hmm.
And the Lord said to Moses, I have seen this people, and indeed it is a stiff-necked people. Now therefore, let me alone, that my wrath may burn hot against them, and I may consume them, and I will make of you a great nation.
Okay, so here God's done. He's just had enough. He's ready to be done with it. And Moses has a response. Susan Hendrick, Will you read verse 11 through, read verse 11.
Then Moses entreated the Lord his God and said, O Lord, why doth thine anger burn against thy people, whom thou hast brought out from the land of Egypt with great power and with a mighty hand?
So Moses doesn't, he, you know, God, you've done this, and now why are you going to do this? And he has a reason. And the reason he gives for not wanting God to do this, is it just because he's so crazy about the Israelites? No. Moses is probably about as put out with them as God is. But, Sandra, if you would read verse 12 and 13.
Why should the Egyptians speak and say, he brought them out to harm them, to kill them in the mountain, and to consume them from the face of the earth? Turn from your fierce wrath and relent from this harm to your people. Remember Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, your servants to whom you swore by your own self, and said to them, I will multiply your descendants as the stars of heaven. And all this land that I have spoken of, I give to your descendants, and they shall inherit it forever.
So there's two reasons that Moses addresses God in this time. The first one is the Egyptians are going to say, you just brought them out here to kill them. That was your intent all along. And so he did not want God's name to be slandered. But also he reminds God, you made these promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And that resonated with God evidently. So Carol, read verse 14. 14 of 32.
So the Lord changed his mind about the harm which he said he would do to his people.
So here's Moses, who goes from not wanting to deal with this at all. He couldn't talk and all that. He's doing a good job talking to God, isn't he? You know, why would he ever have had a problem talking to Moses, I mean to Pharaoh, the way he responds back and forth to God? It's interesting to me to see this special relationship. Moses was a special servant. God said he was the only one that he spoke to face to face. And so Moses has enough love and respect for God that he is willing to stand up and want to protect God. I find that interesting. You know, so many times we're willing to throw God under the bus when something bad happens. But here Moses is trying to persuade God, don't make yourself look bad. And I'm sure God, it didn't matter to God what the Egyptians thought. He was going to do what he was going to do. He had already pretty much destroyed them. So this is the first time that we read that of what God had planned to do and what he did. And so then down in verse 30 through 32, Moses is addressing the people. Let's see, no, I got my. There's still the there. Moses confronts Aaron about what he did. Moses is still dealing with what they've done in the with the idol. And then so at the in the end, Moses he tells them in verse 30, you've committed a great sin, and I'm going to up to the Lord. Perhaps I can make atonement for your sin. So they're still dealing with all this one thing. And so Moses returned to the Lord, and he tells him, alas, this people has committed a great sin because of the God they made. He says, but now if you will forgive their sin. And this is bold. I cannot imagine anybody saying this to God. If not, please blot me out of your book which you have written. You know, that's, we think about, you know, I think in my prayers, sometimes I'm not very bold about things that's really on my heart. I feel like God knows what's on my heart. Moses was bold. Of course, he was speaking to God openly. But, and so the Lord said to Moses, whoever has sinned against me, I will blot him out of my book. So God's not going to just, okay, Moses, I'll throw you out with the trash with the rest of them. You've not done anything, Moses. I'm not. And so he doesn't even indict Moses for being so bold in his speech to him. And so as I read about Moses, it's just something that is so hard for me to comprehend. But yet it's very comforting to know that if we truly are serving God, we can bring anything before God that's on our heart. And we can speak about it boldly. If we're asking out of sincerity and faith, he's going to listen. So then...
It reminds me of a passage in the New Testament that talks about prayer and according to God's will. You know, Moses at this time, you know, he's asking something, but it's not according to God's will.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, he was even putting himself between Israel and God. God had to bring him up to the knowledge that I will punish those who sin, you know, not someone
mm-hmm.
praying for them, you know, yeah. from there. So it's important for us to learn what to pray for according to God's will.
Well, I think Moses was sincere in what he said. And sometimes I think in our prayers we're sincere in what we say. But God knows our heart that we do have faith. He knew Moses had faith in him. And so even if we ask of something that is not according to God's will, he's not going to answer it the way we want. But he's not going to write us off because we've asked something that maybe we know is something God's not going to do. So anyway, they go down and... What does God tell them? I didn't put this on the lesson, but what did God say to Moses in verse 34 and 35 that he was going to do?
He's going to punish them and smoke them with
a flame. That's true. He still punished them. Even though God relented and did not destroy them, he still punished them. And then in verse 33, we start on B here, the consequences after the golden calf. Elizabeth, would you read chapter 33, verse 1 through 3, please?
Then the Lord spoke to Moses, "Depart, go up from here, you and the people whom you have brought up from the land of Egypt, to the land of which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, 'To your descendants I will give it.' I will send an angel before you, and I will drive out the Canaanites, the Amorites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. Go up to a land flowing with milk and honey, for I will not go up in your midst, because you are an obstinate people, and I might destroy you on the way."
God's still angry, isn't he? And so he refuses to go. He said, "I'm not going. You go up and you do what I've told you to do, but I'm not going with you." And so the people of Israel, the people heard this and this sad word, and they went into mourning. So the people were sorry, but we, you know, are we
they've
ever
always been sorry?
Huh?
They've always been sorry. After the fact.
Oh yeah, they're always sorry after the fact, but it does not change anything. They continue to fall into the same exact sin over and over and over by not trusting God, not doing what he said, always having their little idols on the side that they really think are the ones that are getting them through. And so verse 5, he says, "Say to the sons of Israel, 'You are an obstinate people. Shall I go up in your midst for one moment? I would destroy you.'" He's still so angry, he's afraid to even be among. I say afraid. God knows if he goes among the people what he's going to do. And so Moses, I feel sorry for Moses, because here he is, God saying, "Take these people and go," and he's barely getting through with God. How is he going to manage these people if God doesn't go? And so Moses does some things, and then we get down into 12 through 17. Moses makes a plea to God. Moses said to the Lord, "See, you say to me, 'Bring up this people,' but you yourself have not let me know whom you will send with me. Moreover, you have said, 'I have known you by name, and you have also found favor in my sight. So he's telling Moses, you know, you still have my favor. But Moses tells God, I pray you, if I have found favor in your sight, let me know your ways, that I may know you, that I may find favor in your sight. Consider, too, that this nation is your people. You know, Moses is kind of reminding God, this wasn't my idea. You wanted these people. You said you were going to make them a nation. And so God says, my presence shall go with you, and I will give you rest. Then he said to him, Moses said to God, if your presence does not go with us, do not lead us up from here. For how then can it be known that I have found favor in your sight, I and your people? Is it not by your going with us, so that we, I and your people, may be distinguished from all the other people who are upon the face of the earth? The Lord said to Moses, I will also do this thing of which you have spoken, for you have found favor in my sight, and I have known you by name. So God makes this plea. I mean, Moses makes this plea. He knows that, I think Moses knows he's not going to make it with these people if God's not alone. Because he does not have the power to punish these people and bring them to their knees like God does. And so then we go on and we're not going to deal with it a whole lot. Moses asked to see God in verse 19. Through 23, he asks to see the glory of God, and God's response to him is, I will show you my glory, but I will not allow you to see my face. And so, after all this, then Moses asks another favor. You know, you say you're going to go with me. Sometimes, do you ever feel like, okay, I've pressed enough, and I better just be thankful for what I got and move on? Moses wasn't there. God said, I'll go with you, and he said, well, okay, I want to see your glory. You know, and God tells him no, but Moses had the courage to ask. So Moses has gone from an unwilling, reluctant servant to a man who has extraordinary faith and has extraordinary, I don't know how to put it, guts is not the right word, but courage. He's a very courageous by this point in his life.
I also see that he's doing it for God's glory. You know,
yes.
This is not the first time, it won't be the last. Mm-hmm. When he talks about what it will show.
That's one of the points that further down in the lesson. Why? That's one of the questions. What was Moses, and we'll deal with that when we get there. What was Moses' purpose in all of this? So we get through that. And so we go from Exodus 34, and now let's go to Numbers chapter 11.
I'm going to mention in 32, where God tells Moses to go down the mountain and meet the people.
Mm-hmm.
He says, your people.
Mm-hmm.
And Moses, when he talks back, he says, your people.
That's right. That's right. And do you think God really forgot they were his people? No. But he is trying to impress on Moses that you are the leader of these people. You're responsible for these people. That's the job I gave you. And do you think Moses is sorry now that even reluctantly he took the job? If he does, he doesn't show it in his speech to God and in his actions toward the things that God expects him to do. That's a good point. I noticed that too as I read through here, and I thought, this is interesting. Whose people is this? Is it Moses or God? In a way, it's both. Okay, let's turn to Numbers chapter 11. Verse 10 through 15. What is the issue here? What are these people grumbling about this time?
They're starving. They think they're starving.
We don't have any meat. You know, we are the meat-eating people. Why do we think that? Why would we know that the Israelites were a meat-eating people? Because of all the sacrifices God gave them. And the sacrifices they had to eat. They had to eat the Passover. They were required to eat all of this meat for their sacrifices to God. And so that's what they're used to. Well, now I don't have that, and so poor little me. God had provided them the manna. And whatever was in the manna was enough to sustain them and give them the strength to do what they needed to do. But we want what we want. We don't want what we've got. Do you ever tell your children, you've got what you've got and not what you want, and that's all you're going to get? Maybe not with food, but you know how kids are. They're always wanting something. But Moses, I don't know if Moses feels sorry for the people or if he's just tired of fooling with them. Get in the right chapter and maybe it'll make better sense. Moses heard these people and they were weeping throughout their families, at the doorway of his tent. And here again, we see the anger of the Lord. If the Lord had not, what else is in the promises that God made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? That it's not just he's dealing with these people, but he's got a bigger purpose. That probably doesn't make any sense.
The seed promise.
The seed promise. And so, God knows what his plan is, and he's going to bring his plan to fruition. And aren't we thankful he did? Because without his bringing his plan to fruition, we would not be here today studying these things to learn about how God deals with his people, so we know how he's going to deal with us. But anyway, Moses hears this in verse 10, and Moses was displeased. If you see in the footnote, if you have a footnote, literally, this was evil in Moses' sight. You know, he's not pleased with the people, but I'm not sure that he's appreciative of what God has done either. Because in verse 11, he asked the Lord, "Why have you been so hard on your servant? And why have I not found favor in your sight? And you have laid the burden of all these people on me." Moses is beginning to feel the weight of all of the responsibility that has been laid on his shoulders. And so he asks several questions. Why have you been so hard on me? Why have I not found favor in your sight? Was it I who conceived all these people, verse 12? Was it I who brought them forth? And then you told me, carry them in your bosom as a nurse carries a nursing infant in the land which you swore to their fathers. Verse 13, where am I to get meat these people? Verse 8, I alone am not able to carry this people because it is too burdensome for me. And then verse 15, so if you're going to deal with me thus, please kill me at once. If I have found favor in your sight, and do not let me see my wretchedness. So now he's asking God to kill him. Don't just take my name out of your book. Just give me some peace. Get me out of this mess. And God's not mad at Moses. We will see eventually one instance where God punishes Moses. But verse 16, the Lord said therefore to Moses, gather me 70 servants from the men of Israel, whom you know to be elders of the people, and bring them to the tent of meeting, and let them stand before me. And so we see that the people are grumbling. And would you consider Moses grumbling? Yeah, he is. He's grumbling too. Do the people really have a reason to grumble? No, they're just not getting what they want. They're being fed. They have all the food they need to sustain them for life. They want meat. Moses, does he have a real reason to be tired and wearisome? Yes, he does. He's been carrying these people through the wilderness and dealing with this for over 2 years now, and he's tired. And so God sees that, and so he provides Moses now. He's going to appoint these 70 elders to help him be judges of the people.
You know, one quick thing. Up there, it talks, God calls people, the ones who are initiating the trouble, rabble.
Mm-hmm.
Rabble stirred up the people.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we're not careful, we allow people in the world, you know, the unfaithful, the discontent, the ones who have an agenda, to cause us to be discontent and to complain about things and to lead us down the wrong path.
That's true, but does it have to be people of the world?
No,
because so many times, what happens in a congregation? You get a little group together, and they're unhappy and they're discontent.
Yeah.
It happened right in this congregation several years ago. We were gone in a meeting, and there was a small group of people that were unhappy, and they thought, they claimed the whole congregation just about was unhappy. And when the elders got to meeting with the people, they didn't know why they were unhappy. They didn't know why they were in this group, why they were in these meetings that the elders were trying to have to see. They were wanting Steve to leave. They wanted Steve to be fired because it was a case of adultery that had been dealt with, and they didn't like the way it was handled because they were the guilty party. And so, but it doesn't have to be the world. It can be members of a congregation who are unhappy, and they're just, they don't, maybe there's sin in their life, and they're the ones wanting to, they're wanting the ones to want to lead and change and be in charge. So, but these were all Israelites that were causing this problem. It's, you're right, it can come from outside the world, but it doesn't have to. And then I did not put this on your lesson. I did not have verse 31 of chapter 11 through 35. So the Lord brings the quail, and they spent all day and night gathering it, and all the next day, and they gathered and gathered. And then they sit down to eat, and what happened as soon as the meat was in their mouth? It says the meat was still between their teeth. What did God do? What does it say again? He brought a plague. His anger kindled against them again. Over and over we see this phrase about the anger of the Lord. We see it down again in when we didn't have this on our lesson, but with Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses in verse 9 of chapter 12, so the anger of the Lord burned against them. So over and over again, they are doing everything in their power to make God destroy them. But in his restraint and in his wanting to bring forth the things that he has prepared, he continues on. Okay, any comment or question left on the people grumble because of the meat? Okay, let's go to Numbers chapter 14. This is the second time that God is ready to destroy them. Doesn't say that he would, let's see. Yeah, he was going to make a nation of Moses again here. We're not going to read the whole chapter. We're just going to pick out a few verses to read. This is basically what happened. The spies went in and they came back, and what did they say? Yeah, 10 of them said we can't do it. And so they discouraged the whole, here again, this isn't rabble from outside. This is from within their confines of the people that God's leading. The majority of the people, of the spies said that we can't take it, and they convinced the majority of the people that we can't take it. Joshua and Caleb were the only two that stood up and said, yes, we can do this. God's with us. We can do this. And so they were once again punished. Let's look. Whose turn is it to read? Elizabeth, have you read? Okay. Linda, would you read verse 11 and 12 of chapter 14?
The Lord said to Moses, how long will this people spurn me? And how long will they not believe in me, despite all the signs which I have performed in their midst? I will smite them with a pestilence and expose them, and I will make you into a nation greater and mightier.
So here again, he's ready to do away with this set of the nation of Israel and make a nation out of Moses. What a great honor that would have been for Moses. If Moses would have been a man who was seeking his own glory, and how many times do you find people that they just want to put their stamp in this world and have their name out there? To be known for something. That would be something to be known for. He's known for something, something greater, probably, than if he had a nation made after himself, because we see his restraint, we see his love for God, we see his love for this people, and that was more important to him than making a name for himself. But God continues on, and we know he's ready to destroy them, but once again, Moses steps in, and the Egyptian, what does somebody give me a brief synopsis of why Moses did not want God to do this.
Does the inhabitants of the land not hear about it? Know that he promised to bring them out, that they were too weak to cover the kind of land that God had promised.
Yeah. and that God wasn't strong enough to do it either. You know, so they've seen the cloud and the pillar, and now you just desert us, and what are they going to think about you? Is basically what I get from what Moses in his conversation to God. Verse 15 says, now if you slay this people as one man, then the nations will have heard of your, that have heard of your fame will say, because the Lord could not bring his people into the land which he promised by an oath, he slaughtered them in the wilderness. He didn't have the power to do it, so he just killed them. And so Moses here again is concerned about God. That's Moses' concern. Sometimes it seems like he's pleading for the people, but then the main focus is he doesn't want God's name to be smeared. Verse 17 through 19, we read that, we looked at that briefly. And then Moses has a prayer. Let's look down in verse, maybe that's where I've got 17 through 19. He starts talking about, now I pray, let the power of the Lord be great, just as you have declared. And then he talks to the Lord, you're slow to anger, abundant in loving kindness, forgiving iniquity, and so on and so forth. And then he asks in 19, pardon, I pray, the iniquity of this people according to the greatness of your loving kindness, just as you also have forgiven this people from Egypt until now. So Moses doesn't just discount what they've done in the past. He's just asking God to continue with his forgiveness. Do you ever feel like you just do the same thing over and over and over again, make the same mistake, and you go to God in prayer, and at some point you just feel like, who am I to even ask for forgiveness for this? But God is very forgiving as long as we're penitent. I'm not sure that the people are penitent, but God sees Moses and hears his plea for them. And so in verse 20, Lauren, would you read verse 20 of chapter 14, please?
Then the Lord said, I have pardoned according to your word.
And verse 21.
But truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord.
Okay. And he goes on to say that all men have seen his glory and his signs which he performed in Egypt. And it's interesting. He says, yet you have put me to the test these 10 times and have not listened to my voice. Did that mean that 10 times was all they had tested him? No. That's just a number for perfection. That means a complete. He feels like he's been completely tested in this. And so we get down to verse 20 through 28 and we see God's reply. And we've been talking about that. And so he again forgives them and they move on. But was that the end of it? Did he say, okay, I forgive them?
No.
What were the consequences?
They won't go into the promised land.
The 20 years old and upward will not enter the promised land. The only two people, there were only two people besides Moses and Aaron, and they, neither one of them entered either, but that entered the land. Who were they?
Joshua and Caleb.
So the two spies that went in and said, yes, we can take the land, God granted them to go into the land.
And the other 10 died by the plague.
That's right.
They didn't.
Yes, the other died by the plague. And so here we see God over and over. They just cannot seem to get it right. Okay. What other curse did everybody suffer? What other problem did everybody suffer?
40 years
wandering in the land. You know, they could have immediately gone in and taken the land. And in fact, I didn't put this on there, but at the end of this, it says they went up and Moses tried to get them not to go, but they went anyway. You know, we're going to go take the land. God's not going to be with you. But anyway, there are so many things that Moses had to deal with. There's no way we could spend a whole set of class periods for 3 months just studying Moses and his difficulties with the children of Israel. I'm just trying to hit some highlights here to show the contrast of what Moses was and what he became. He became from being an imperfect servant to being someone that God used extensively over and over. Any other comments or questions on that event?
Well,
And this last event is Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And this is the third time that God's ready to destroy them. Turn to Numbers 16, and we'll look at verse 20. I didn't deal with what happened. Briefly, what happened, why is this event even, what caused the anger this time? What did Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, what was their issue? And they were going to offer sacrifices. They could do whatever Moses and Aaron did. And verse 11, he said, Moses tells them, therefore you and all your company are gathered together against the Lord. But as for Aaron, who is he that you grumble against him? They wanted Aaron's job. They wanted to be the ones to do what... You know, sometimes people see somebody that are doing a job and there looks like there's a lot of glory with it. I wonder how much of the work they would have really wanted to do, having to do all the sacrifices. They would have gotten tired and we're going to do it our way. They didn't want to do it God's way through Aaron. I'm sure they would not have been happy too long with doing what Aaron had to do. But instead of them just being angry at Aaron and wanting him, they were against God. And so Moses summons all of them, and some of them won't come. But then we get down to God, what God has to say. Nadine, would you read verse 20 and 21 of chapter 16, please?
Separate yourselves from among the congregation, that I may consume them instantly. But they fell on their faces and said, O God, God of the spirits and of all flesh, when one man sins, will you be angry with the entire congregation?
They know what it means when the Lord told Moses and Aaron, get away from these people. But Moses and Aaron, again, stand between God and the people, especially Moses. Then Moses is the one who spoke to the Lord. We see Moses continually putting himself between God and these people. Obstinate people. And in verse, Moses asks, if you're with one man sins, you're going to be angry with the whole congregation. And then it's starting verse 23, he tells Moses and Aaron to tell everybody to get back from around the dwellings of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And so he went to Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, and the elders of Israel following him, and he told them, depart from these people, get back away, verse 27. And then it's interesting, he wants them to understand this is not him doing this. Verse 28, Moses said, by this you shall know that the Lord has sent me to do all these deeds, for this is not my doing. If these men die the death of all men, or if they suffer the fate of all men, then the Lord has not sent me. But if the Lord brings about an entirely new thing, and the ground opens up and swallows them up with all that is theirs, and they descend alive into Sheol, then you will understand that these men have spurned the Lord. Moses wants them to understand, this is not me. I have not done this. This is God. God's doing this. Did Moses physically have the power to make the earth open up and swallow them up? No. That was the Lord. And so they did. They got away, and God sent the fire, and it consumed 250 who were offering incense. They were in the process of doing what was Aaron's responsibility. And so this is the third time. It doesn't say that he's going to make a nation out of Moses, but I'm sure that would have been his plan. That's what his plan was all along. He could make a nation out of Moses, but Moses again steps in. So this is the third time God's ready to kill them. And it's interesting, in this very same instance, they're not through with this. We go down to verse 41. Bobby, would you read verse 41 of Numbers 16?
Murmured against Moses and against Aaron, saying, ye have killed the people of
Did the people get the point? No, they didn't. So here, even after it swallowed up, there's still, this is your fault, Moses. In fact, instead of appreciating Moses for standing between them and the Lord and pleading for them that the Lord not destroy the whole congregation, so it seems like there's some people who just never, ever learn the lesson. And they, so here there, verse 42, it talks like, you know, the people, they're assembled against Moses and Aaron, and they turn toward the tent of meeting, and what happened? The cloud comes and covers it, and the glory of God appeared. And again, this is the fourth time. Get away from this congregation that I may consume them instantly. Then they fell on their faces. Moses and Aaron. Moses said to Aaron, take your censer and go out and put the incense in it and go out in the midst of the people, because the plague has begun. These people would have, nobody else would have died in this incident had they just been thankful that God spared them and didn't destroy them, that only 250 people died. How many more died after because of the plague on account of Korah, beside those who died on the account of Korah? Does anybody remember? 14,700. 14,700 more people died because they could not obey God, because they could not believe in God and do what he said to do. Is there any, you know, we talk about all the people in the world and only a few are going to be saved. Is there any way we can begin to doubt that? Because these people are dealing with God on a personal basis day out, day in and day out, and they still don't believe. People say, if I could just see a miracle, I'd believe. These people saw how many miracles, and they still did not believe. They were still stuck on wanting what they wanted. And so, what we can learn from this is we better obey God. We better be thankful that God is patient with us and that he has given us these lessons that we can learn. And I don't know of anybody today that's a Christian that feels like they're a perfect servant. We're all imperfect servants striving to serve God. We all make mistakes, and God understands that. But if we will treat God as holy and depend on him and trust in him and follow his word, be obedient. These people never could learn to be obedient. And they never do. That's why they're finally taken into captivity, only to return so God could fulfill his promise. Okay, now this is, any more questions on Korah, Dathan, or comments on Korah, Dathan, and Abiram? Okay, now this gets, the next question gets down to what Linda was speaking about. What was Moses' major concern in every one of these situations? That God gives a reason, but I think it's really in all of them because he states it so plainly in the two that he does talk about.
What the other nations would think about God.
That's right. That God would be accused of not being able to do what he set out to do. And that had nothing whatsoever, as he proves, because he brought them in and did give them the land. That he did prove that he was able. And it wasn't he wasn't able, he was just angry. He had had enough. And can you blame him? No. None of us can blame him for his being ready to give up on these people. Okay, we're a little over what I like to go to, but what happened that made God finally punish Moses and Aaron?
God told Moses to speak to the rock to give the children water when they were grumbling. And Moses was having one of those angry moments, and he whacked the rock and said, do I need to give you this water?
In this instance, I don't remember, God did not tell him what to do. He just told him to bring water. The first time, he told him to speak to the rock. So I don't know if it was him striking the rock, but look at verse 12. Let's look at verse 12. The Lord, of chapter 20, the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, because you have not believed me, to treat me as holy in the sight of the sons of Israel. Therefore, you shall not bring this assembly into the land. So, back up in verse 10, he's angry. You're right, Susan. Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together, and Moses said to them, "Listen now, you rebels. Shall we bring forth water for you out of this rock?" I don't know if it was because he struck the rock, and I meant to look it up. I think there's somewhere it talks about Moses speaking rashly with his tongue, and I thought I had that written in my Bible, and I don't, but I will look that up.
Verse 8 does say, "Take the rod, you and your brother Aaron, assemble the congregation, and speak to the rock."
Okay, I'm sorry, I missed that part.
Okay.
But I'm not sure if it's because he struck it or because he talked, it was we.
Yeah.
Aaron and I are doing this. He didn't give the glory to God. So, it may be that he struck the rock. Go ahead.
In 27:14, it says you rebelled against my command and to treat me as holy before their eyes at the water.
Okay. 27:14. Mm-hmm.
And he struck it twice.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I cannot state for positive what he did that was wrong. But whether it was the striking or his mouth or whatever it was, he did do something to give God the glory.
In Psalms 106, verse 33, it says, "Because they were rebellious against his spirit, he spoke rashly with his lips."
That's the one I was thinking about in Psalms.
Verse 12 says, "Because you did not believe me to hallow me in the eyes of the children of Israel, you shall not bring the assembly into the land."
I've always kind of wondered, I don't know for sure, there's no verse that writes it out for us, but because of that and because of the work in Psalms, "Rashly with your lips, you did not make present me as holy," or however your version read that. And so, my version says, "Treat me as holy." Anyway, whatever he did, it cost him the right and Aaron to go into the land. So Moses couldn't just do anything he wanted to and get away with it. Moses had his limits too, but this was not a case of he's dealing with God between God and the people. He's just mad at the people, and whatever he does, he does it, and he doesn't give God the credit or the glory, and so he doesn't get to go into the land. And that's sad. Moses really wanted to go into the land, and when he died, he was still strong. But God said no, and so we have to be careful that we don't get so bold with God that we take God off the throne, and just because I want something, I think I have the right to expect God to do anything that I want in any manner that I want. One more thing, even in the face of punishment, the punishment that God gave him, what did Moses do to show that he still had faith in God? Numbers 27:15.
Yes.
Yes. He still cared for these people, but he also wanted God's name. I think it was still because he wanted them to... He knew without a leader, they weren't going anywhere. They had to have a good, strong leader. And God appointed Joshua to take that place. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Okay. Next week, I am going to try to cover Hannah, Eli, and Elijah. So we're going to move on. I appreciate y'all's coming, and I appreciate that y'all have studied and